the date of elections. This is our last meeting to plan. I don't know whether you're happy or not. This is our last planning session with you. The next time we come here talking about the plan, it will be the sixth administration. You know, most politics has got its own ways of dealing with issues. We may be here, we may not be here. So we are ready for anything. Am I out of order, Honourable Kaula?
No, you're not, Chair. No, just an interesting issue you've raised, Chair. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. You say to the minister, if we don't change the date, do we already have a date? Can you please give it to me, Chair? I'm very interested.
Elections were in May last year. The assumption is that we'll have them in May next year. So don't take that serious. But having said that, Honourable Minister, it will be important to reflect that we must say that we had a good relationship with your department since the beginning of our term, and we feel that it's one of the departments that we've been proud of, except some challenges which were beyond our control, your control. But I think we're back on track now. And I must say, Honourable Minister, that there are a number of things that we raised at the beginning of the term, which there had been major improvement in your department. We appreciate, though there are still some challenges, we really appreciate that. One of the issues that we raised very sharp is the issue of the financial standing of the department at the time when we came. During our year, the department had a qualified audit opinion for the and the next year. But as I speak now, you have unqualified audit opinion. We are all, together with you, expecting for a clean audit, unless otherwise something goes wrong. But we can see the indications that there is a possibility that we get a clean audit. We really appreciate that. But also, in terms of achieving your targeted objectives, you have moved. There's not much bigger improvement, but there's improvement because the year in question, you were at 81%. But today, we expect that by the end of 2017-18, at 89% is a good improvement. At least directions are indicating that you plan things that are within your take and also are able to implement them. In terms of spending money, there was huge under expenditure at the time, but now we've received the fourth quarter of 2017. You are standing at 650,000. Compared, looking at your budget, it's really, I'm not saying it's minor, but it's minor. 650,000 for a department of billions. It's a good improvement. We really appreciate that as a committee. And also, we had dealt with the issue of long queues, Minister, you remember, which was an issue at the time. But we are back to that. I've been to my office in Mbombela. I always pass there, because when I go to town, I pass there. Queues are very long now. But, and also, I had hoped that Honorable Samka will be here. Alfred Nzo, he had specific offices where there are serious challenges in terms of queues. But I was happy that I heard you talking about that, that you are addressing that. And we are convinced, Minister, that you do have capacity, together with your team, to deal with that. At the time when things were running well, you'll go there in no time, you receive a message informing you that we receive your application. It will keep on updating you. It's not really happening now. I'm not sure whether it will be updated or not. but we are hoping that that will be addressed, Honourable Minister. Having said that, there was an issue of building new offices in rural areas. We have not moved on that one, Minister. I know it's beyond your control because you depend on the budget allocated to you. But in terms of the communities out there, it's still an issue. But we have improved, made our office very efficient and effective. But with the old offices, we do want to see new offices, especially in rural areas and our townships. That is why we are having these long queues, because the population is growing, but the number of offices are still few. We got to have new offices. I don't know whether next year is an issue that one will have to follow up, the incoming committee will have to follow up. I don't know whether you'll still be here because, yeah, you might... I'm not talking about that. It's not my take. I'm talking about the alignment of committees, whether you'll be in security cluster or you will remain in social in terms of parliament, whether there will be a realignment. But it's a matter that we would like to see it being followed up because we do need those new offices. There is a matter of court, Minister, which you have to follow up about refugees offices in Port Elizabeth and in Cape Town, where it was said by March 2018 those offices should be there. You'll have to brief us how far away. Otherwise, we don't want to be in breach of court. Then the issue of six ports of entry, Minister, that you want to do renovation, major renovations. We've been talking about this for quite a while now. If there is improvement, there's very little improvement, but I know that you depend on public works. I don't know where is the problem, whether the problem is with us or with public works. It's an area that we have to follow up on, Honourable Minister. Then the last issue is BMA. Just firstly indicating that as this committee, Minister, we are a committee of five departments, all of them very much important. Department of Health, Human Settlement, Social Development, Water and Sanitation, together with yourselves as Home Affairs, with about 30 entities that we have as a committee aligned to the department. But we tried our best as a committee to prioritize. If you look at the number of days we had since the bill was referred to us on the 8th of June last year and a formal briefing in September, you are the department that we have seen most as compared to other departments, but we have not finalized the bill. In our last meeting, if you go back to your team, they will tell you that there were few issues, smaller issues that needs to be done. But there is a process that we are hoping that it will assist us in our program. We have the 5th of June to fund with our busy schedule, because now we have even requested to be given permission to meet on Thursdays because we have so much to do as a committee. But we've been able to allocate a date to finalize BMA on the 5th of June. Just, I'm sure in your presentation you will indicate, Minister, the budget that will speak to that, because our hope or wish is to see it being implemented given the pouring nature of our borders. And also in your staff establishment, I saw a high vacancy rate. I don't know whether that speaks to also personnel that will be transferred to the department. But I will await for your presentation. With that It was a long opening remarks, you know, when they say it's the last kick of a dying horse. I hate to make these remarks because we may not have time to do so. I know we're still going to meet on other matters, the report, the DMA and other matters. And also the state of preparedness for the election. We have not had enough or time. Maybe the day when we finalize the border management authority, it will not take us long because most of the things has been dealt with. We may as well squeeze in IEC to get a briefing. How ready are we for elections? Over to you, Minister. You have time up to 11:30. Starting with you with the political overview, then you will then continue. You know how you have planned to do the presentation. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honorable members, Deputy Minister, and distinguished DG. and distinguished DDGs, because she's honorable. Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity to address the committee on our annual performance plan, which forms the basis for the program of action of the department for 2018-2019. The chairperson has covered quite extensively a number of issues that we intend briefing the committee about, which emanate from the government's medium-term strategic framework and how it aligns with the five priorities we outlined at the beginning of the fifth administration for the department, and how we align all of that with the National Development Plan. Obviously, in the course of formulating these plans and implementing them, new challenges arise that require us to respond to, which may not necessarily have been initially part of either the MTSF or the APP. Obviously, when nobody planned for the excessively long queues that we began experiencing in January this year. But we have had to respond to that challenge in a manner that addresses itself to short and medium term approaches as well as long term approaches. The department clearly is in a process of ongoing evolution, which requires that at all times we should be alert and be able to exercise strategic leadership over it. We had said at the start of this fifth administration that there were five priorities we wanted to achieve during this term. Continuing front office improvement through embedding the Moetapile Leadership Initiative, seeking to build a cadre of leaders, of our front office managers that will assist us to deliver quality services to our clients. We have been insisting to the top management that, and the management of the department as a whole, that whilst we do not have beautiful bank-like offices to talk of that people can rave about, but in the least we must offer our clients qualitative services that will ensure that they rather remember the quality of the service than the beauty of the office. Because even if we had beautiful offices, but if the service did not meet the required standards, we wouldn't want people walking around saying, oh, what beautiful offices, they've got air conditioner, they've got all of this, but the service was below expectation. We would like to make our clients our ambassadors. The second priority we set ourselves was the complete overhaul of the international migration policy framework. You will remember, honorable members, that around by 2014, there had been a decision at Home Affairs that we were going to focus on three conceptual papers which would inform our thinking on some issues. Those included the management of asylum seekers, the management of critical skills visas, and as well as the management of undocumented migration into the country. We took the decision in 2014 that we were going to overhaul the entire framework, International Migration White Paper, to upgrade it and make it to be on par with international best practice, which places at the center of international migration the balancing of economic and security issues. I'm happy to say we now have an international migration white paper which is quite extensive, very futuristic in its outlook. But that also in a way simplifies a number of issues that we have to deal with as a department, so that we reduce the administrative burden and introduce strategic management of the various aspects of international migration. The third priority we set ourselves was the finalization of the Border Management Authority. I am quite concerned about the delays we have experienced in this regard, and are hopeful that we should, before the fifth parliament rises, finalize this piece of legislation, because it is so vital to improving our border management through integrated services and application of ICT-based and ICT-led management of our borders. The intention again is not to prevent the entry into South Africa, particularly of the citizens of our continent, but to manage that process in a way that is not going to make South Africa vulnerable, because a vulnerable South Africa is a drawback to the entire region. The fourth priority we set ourselves was the acceleration of the modernization program, which had at its core the introduction of live capture, as well as the introduction of a new and integrated national identity system. Last week, honorable members will be aware, we launched the automated biometric identification system, which is going to put an end to the harness and introduce new functionalities that are more modern and more advanced, which would mean going into the future we will now not only rely on facial recognition and fingerprint identification for the verification and identification of our clients, but we will utilize all forms of biometrics available on a human being to enable us to offer better qualitative services that can be of use not only to government and our stakeholders, such as business, but that can also enhance the security of the country. There is no exaggeration of the value that will be added by this new system, both to the integration of our identification systems, bringing together the National Immigration Identification System, the Movement Control System, and harness the NPR, but the value it will add to business in enabling business positively to identify its clients and avert identity fraud. The modernization program has got to be accelerated. Home Affairs is not where we want it to be. Resources permitting, we would have done more. But I think we all will appreciate the changes we have introduced, even with the meager resources that we have. The fifth priority related to the upgrading of the 6 commercial land ports of entry, a program which has advanced a great deal. We hope that we will get the request for quotation completed soon so that we can go into requests for proposals, identify the service providers, and actually start the process of building. I'm quite excited about the fact that for a few years, whilst our ports of entry are being overhauled, not only will we end up with a new and better organized Bay Bridge, Maseru Bridge, Fixburg Bridge, Kopfontein Bridge, Oshuk, and Libombo, but we're also going to end up with greater management of in and out flows between South Africa and our neighbors, which will assist greatly to enhance economic integration and person-to-person contact, South Africa's role and integration in the SADC region. It will be a major milestone towards the facilitation of the North-South corridor, with Bay Bridge as the biggest and busiest port of entry in sub-Saharan Africa, land port of entry in sub-Saharan Africa. But I'm also excited about the fact that during the construction period, Home Affairs will be identified with infrastructure rollout, something which in the past hasn't easily and immediately been identified with the department. We will be identified with between 6 to 10 billion rand of infrastructure investment and a PPP program that will assist government to deliver much required infrastructure capacity. In the course of the work that we do, we want to facilitate the identification of South Africans through civil registration. We are part of the ID for Africa movement, which aims at doing that throughout the African continent. The department is doing its very best to address these challenges. But We have made enormous progress. 10 million South Africans now have smart ID cards. More than 202,000 of them obtained those smart ID cards through the banks in the 14 pilots that we are currently running around the country. I did make an announcement last week that we had agreed with the banks that pending the finalization of the Memorandum of Understanding of the PPP agreement between us, the banks, and National Treasury, the banks had agreed to extend the pilot branches by 20 branches, which means of the four major banks, each one of them is going to give us five pilot branches. I have identified areas where we are going to locate them based on the current challenges we are experiencing in relation to the queues. I said that we will consider prioritizing Durban, given that Commercial and Umgeni are swamped by clients and we do not have, ideally, a department like Home Affairs should be existing in every major township. You have in Durban major townships that just don't have a Home Affairs office. No Home Affairs office at Umlazi, no Home Affairs office at Wamashu, Inanda, Duzuma, Phoenix, Verulam. It is a major challenge that even with the existence of prospecting Commercial and Umgeni, we are unable to provide a service that meets the expectations of our people. And we are deeply concerned about that. We will prioritize Pietermaritzburg, given the challenges that we are facing, given though DG and Mavoso, you may have to check this. Apparently, the queues have become manageable in Pietermaritzburg, which may mean that we need to rethink. Because, and I will talk to this briefly, because the challenge that you have in many of our offices is really not necessarily that the queues are long. You know, the queues are long, excessively long. So you are dealing with several problems. The one problem is that you have 411 offices for 57 million South Africans. That's grossly inadequate. The second problem is that you, even with the 411 offices that we have, we are both understaffed and in some areas not strategically, we have not strategically deployed our staff. So there are offices that have got more capacity than they need, and there are offices that have less capacity than they need. If you look at what we have done with Umgeni, you can see the over time, strategic interventions that have helped to reorganize the way Umgeni operates. But the fact remains that it's at an intersection of five major townships, a major train station in KZN, an industrial complex, and a major soccer stadium. It really cannot function very well at the best of times. You need to disaggregate the services there. You look at the Kempton Park office. You have to have an office in Tembisa if you want to offer qualitative services to the people of that area. But we have no office in Tembisa, and so we force everybody to come to Kempton Park, and that creates a stampede at Kempton Park. So we have to rethink how we have positioned ourselves, and that's why we've been saying to National Treasury, the finalization of the PPP with the banks is a matter of absolute urgency on our part, because we need to begin to provide services at more footprints outside our offices for those who don't need to come to our offices. But one of the problems we face is management. The problem we're having around Pietermaritzburg was in addition to the capacity issues, was a management problem. And we are beginning to address that, and the impact is being felt. At Umgen, it was a management problem. At Orlando West, DG, it's a management problem. What we are experiencing at Orlando West is a management problem. We have a manager who is not qualified for the volumes, for the level of office that we have, and we need to change it. Deploy her to where she will be managed, she will be better suited, get developed, so that in future she can be either redeployed or deployed to another area. But what I have done is to ask the DG to complete for me an assessment of all our management skills and competencies so that we can decide how the better to deploy our managers to enable us to deliver and perform at the level required. The other problem has been the network problem. So even if the office at Umgeni opens an hour early, which they have been doing, even if they open an hour early, you arrive at the office, they opened at 7:30, but for 2 hours the network is offline. The frequency of downtime at our offices has really been a frustration for our clients, but for our officials too. Because when the system is offline, the officials just have to sit and wait until it comes back online. There's nothing that they can do at the front office to bring it back online. As they sit doing nothing, the clients think that, now abantu base Home Affairs, they are lazy as always. They don't want to work. And so we then have contracted, after enormous pressure around 2016, we finally contracted with Dimension Data to provide us a reliable network, and hopefully we should have 99% network availability by 2019, which will make sure that our offices are online all the time, and downtime is a thing of the past. All of these are interventions that we are making in order to improve, because even the introduction of the APIS, the Automated Biometric Identification System, will require a network that is more reliable. The APIS is going to change the way we do things, it's going to change the way business does business. It will change the way we fight crime. It makes everybody to be within reach, not only relying on their fingerprints, but relying on their palm prints, relying on the footprints, relying on facial recognition, on iris, even DNA in the near future. All of this is going to be within reach. And so the Department of Home Affairs will be so central to government e-governance program, to government management of database, of a reliable database, including a reliable biometric database. So all of these are contained in the APP that I will ask the DG to talk about. But I thought it was important for us to indicate that we are doing a lot of work that hopefully by the end of this financial year we would have gone a long way to improving the services that we offer to our clients and the quality of those services. It helps if your financial management has improved. We intend making not only unqualified audits, but we intend achieving clean audits and making those a part of the culture of Home Affairs. We've gone a long way to reach where we are now, and we are confident that we will achieve another unqualified audit in the list for the 2017-18 financial year, and we are going to ensure that it becomes a part of the culture going forward. But we also have had stable leadership at the management level, and it assisted us a great deal, even though we had some glitches last year. But overall, we have stability. We need to fill the three vacancies of DDGs for information systems, civic services, and counter-corruption. But the department has continued to do well in fighting corruption too, with 60 cases reported last year. Of those, only 33 involved the officials of the department. And I think in a staff establishment of 10,000 people, 33 is a good number. Ideally, we want to reduce the numbers to zero, but I think 33 out of 10,000 has been quite an enormous achievement. We will continue to fill those vacancies, but we will also continue to support the IEC and the government printing works. The IEC is getting itself ready for elections. There is a number of legislative amendments which we are considering that we will bring to Parliament before the fifth Parliament rises, that will assist also in facilitating elections. But the IEC is getting itself ready, looking at all the issues they need to focus on. We are not making any transfers to the government printing works because the company is self-sustainable. We are making close to R1 billion investment in infrastructure expansion over the next 3 years at government printing works, which will enable it to become a real security printer in the country, not only in terms of IDs and passports, but also in terms of visa labels and other printing. There's a number of innovative ideas we're going to introduce in the course of the year around the visa environment, which will assist to facilitate and increase tourism to South Africa. We have been having regular discussions with the Department of Tourism to deal with those, and we have clarified to the Department of Tourism the areas in which we need their support in order for us to ready ourselves to introduce those interventions. They include an electronic visa. They include accrediting the visa, recognizing the visas that have been issued, that are valid visas issued by countries with more stringent visa requirements, so that a person who already possesses a valid visa from Australia or Canada or the US or Britain shouldn't have to reapply for a visa. We can give them an exemption to come to South Africa. But we also are working towards easing, simplifying visas for Chinese and Indian nationals. A lot of work is being done in that regard, and we think it's going to assist us to get more tourism from those countries. We have increased the number of SADC countries to 14 out of 15 that have now been granted visa exemptions by extending visa exemptions to the nationals of Angola and Madagascar. So there is a lot of work that we have already done, and a lot of work that is in the pipeline. I'm sure that the DG will report on that, Chairperson. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Minister, the DG, but just one thing, DG, I'm missing your female managers. You might have forgotten them, or they are somewhere. If not, you Let me allow you to present it.
Thanks, the Honorable Chair, the Honorable Members. And the Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister, my colleagues. And no, Chair Minister has done everything. For me, I just going to go and confirm what the Minister has said in terms of the presentation. So I'll be able to make that time. No, Chairperson, I'm just going to go straight. This issue of mission and mandate, we know, but I think the importance, I'll just touch on those ones which are bringing for the first time. On the issue of the NDP, we've been presenting the slide. But I think Minister has highlighted the priorities of the Minister, but I'll come back in terms of how do they link to the priorities to make sure that we achieve this. And then this is an important slide to say, as Chair, you have already alluded to, that this is the last year of the MTSF. So Home Affairs was given this mandate. So we need to ensure that the plan of this current year must make sure that all this will be delivered. It's the issue of the BMA, it's the integrated border management strategy, secure and well-managed borders by 2018-19, is that we need by 18-19 to register now 74% of births, which are estimated at 1.1 million or 810. So when we come to the priorities, we'll see that we've got that. We need to have a national identity system, but it's going to be operational in 1920, not in this MTSF, but it was there, to make sure that all the 100 designated ports of entry are equipped with the biometric systems, and then immigration and refugee bills submitted to Parliament, which are based on this white paper on international migration. So that's what MTS, as far as all people in South Africa are feeling safe. So when we look at our plan, we need to make sure that when we come and report at the end of the 5 years, this must be achieved. And then in terms of decent employment, was for us now to have 3 premium visa centers, which has already been achieved. And then we need to reach 85% of critical skills adjudicated within 4 weeks of application. We're on track. We're able to do that. And then on the efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service, the target was for the establishment of a DSA contact center. It's already operational. Then again, on the social protection and social cohesion, there was no commitment given to Home Affairs. But here is what we're going to look as we present the priorities now of 18-19. Then the key was for us to make sure that how do we make sure that we link what is sitting on the MTSF and what is a minister's priority. So the column which is important is the last one now to say we want now that, but though the MTSF target was saying 17-18, but we need that by 18-19 BMA must be established. But I will come back now on how that we have put it on the document. Then the integrated border management strategy. So the implementation says we're in the implementation now. It has already been approved and we're monitoring it. Then now the immigration and refugee bill submitted to Parliament. As ministers indicated, we've finished now the white paper on international migration. We are busy now drafting this immigration and refugee bill, but I'll give you now when I come to targets how we'll do it. So it must be in Parliament by before it closes. Then 810 beds. This year we've achieved our recession of beds, which was 750. Our target now for 18-19 is 810. So it means now we'll be complying with the MTSF target. Then the national identity system, what we are doing, the Minister has indicated now that this is a major issue for us, is that firstly what we want to finalize now in the 18-19 is that the asylum seeker management process must be developed into live capture. So remember now, live capture means if I need my ID, I need my passport, and even if you go now to them, so that we don't use a paper. So what we're doing in civics will now go into the refugee centers. Secondly, once now we are already declared as a refugee, not an asylum seeker, you will be able now to go and apply for your card, or if you need a passport, in the normal offices of Home Affairs. So the card has already been designed and the passport. So now it's just for us now to make sure that by end of 18-19 that is happening. Then the bigger system at the end is this national identity system. So what we have done here, we have appointed now CSIR TruCita, who is developing specs for us. So by end of this financial year, that specifications must be ready, so that now in the MTSF, it says by 1920 we'll go now for procurement and we'll have the NIS. APs, as Minister has indicated, we have launched it during the budget vote. So the target for this year is that now we'll transfer all the information which is sitting on HANIS into the APs. And then again, in the following year, we just deal with the other parts of it. And then we took a decision to reposition Home Affairs. The draft bill will be submitted to the Minister now for approval by end of this 18-19. Cabinet already approved the business case. That's why we'll be, so now the bill will be processed in the 19-20. Minister talked about the issue of the networks. As already said, we have appointed Dimension Data, but I will give now when I give quarterly what we'll be doing. Then with the 100% of all ports designated, we want, first we'll have a full biometric piloted at one point of entry. What we're doing, there's a new EMCS, where now we want it must be integrated. Because the problem we have now, a person comes from Zimbabwe as an asylum, said I'm an asylum seeker, goes to our refugee center, is recorded there. But during the festive, he goes back to Zimbabwe now as a traveler. But because the systems are not linked, we are not able to say, no, but we are an asylum seeker. How do you go back home now? Yeah. So now this new system will be able now to be integrated to NWIS, it will be integrated to NPR and all the systems. But whilst we are doing that, we have done now the 10, we'll be finalizing now the 62 ports. So when I come to quarterly targets, I'll give you how we'll finish that 62. The other issue which we are dealing with it now on is what we called a trusted traveler program. Once we finish that MCS and this APs, we'll also get now coming up with this trusted traveler program. What it means is that if you are from Lesotho or from whatever, we'll take your fingerprints. We know who you are, and then when you come to our port of entry, you just put your finger, and then you scan the passport, the gate opens for you. And then now, instead of having 15 immigration officers, I will have one. Because the purpose of that immigration officer is to look that if you are green, you go. If you are amber, there is an issue, then it refers you. If you are red, then you go back. So that's how it's going to help us on the staffing issue which we have. Then on the PPP, I will give that. When we close for the ports of entry, procurement was already issued as at end of March. So what we're waiting for now is for people to submit. Our target is that by end of this financial year, a preferred bidder must have been appointed. So it means now by April 2019, the dust must start seeing in the ports of entry, because now it will be the construction. So this year we're finalizing the procurement processes and everything. We have the preferred bidder comes 1st of April, they must start digging and building. Then in terms of the, as I've said, number the three premiums have already achieved, and now we are achieving our 85%, but the key thing now would be that immigration and refugees bill submitted to Parliament. Then the issue of MWL is what we talked about. We are targeting to really train about 500 managers. We'll split that training in terms of junior, middle, and senior management development program to make sure that we improve the performance and the professionalism within the department. Chair, there's something called the mandate paper, which I think you ask around the PMA. as well in terms of the funding. What the mandate paper is, Treasury with the presidency is responsible for this thing called the mandate paper. It gives the direction in the allocation of funds by National Treasury. So what has been prioritized is number one, but as we are coming on number six. So for the 2018-19, which is this current year, we are in the mandate paper. So it is there that now funding must be allocated for PMA. So when now we go from, remember now the budget process starts in August, where we submit, and then now in November they deal with the allocations. So now in the budget of 19-20, we'll be able now to see the funding for PMA. So it is in the mandate paper. Then you know, in the following year, which is 19-20, this NIS now, which we're talking about, they want now that there must be integration of similar programs, such as DHI ID card, driver's license, and SASA card. The Minister of Social Development attended the launch of the APIS. He's already now said, we must meet between myself and the CEO and come back to the ministers about how that smart card can assist SASA, because a smart card has got a chip on it. So we can use the same thing to pay grants rather than doing all these other things and won't be reinventing any wheel. Nigeria is already doing that. So it's something which can be done. So that's what Ghana in the 1920 will be dealing with. So that's why I get this issue of the PMA. If it is finalized, it will help us so that when we go and submit the budget request in August, we are talking about something which is already there. Yes, well, ministers touch on a lot of challenges which we still face as a department which we are working on. So I'm not going to take much. I'll just pick those ones. To say now, in the issue of the management of migration and asylum seeker, the issues to say, how are we responding into that? Ministers already talked about this policy on dynamic international migration. The issue now facing us is the Refugees Appeals Board and Standing Committee in terms of capacitating it. But when I deal with the budget, we have received it's about 70 million, which has been allocated to Home Affairs from CARA funding. CARA funding is that what is it? Crime?
Places of crime.
There's a funding. If now I was involved in a crime, and then I get arrested, the assessed forfeiture takes that money. When that money night goes back, and then if you are in the security cluster, because before we're not, but because now we're part of the cluster, we're able now to get an allocation. But when I deal with the budget, I will give you how much amount we did get. Overall border management, we've already talked about that. Historical underfunding, the only thing which is going to help us here now is this repositioning, because once now it is approved, Home Affairs will have its own act, and then based on that act, it will indicate how we can be able now to get some funding without only in the process of the fiscus. And then now the partnership minister has already attached to it the matter of dependence on these departments. Public works is still an issue for us, but the CETA, there is this process now of this multi-party agreement which we have with them, which we hope it will resolve the issues. Non-integration of systems is still an issue for us, but building this NIS, it will be able to help us to deal with this. When we talk about the lack of efficient record management, here I want to be making clear that I'm not talking about the financial ones, but what we talk about here is that we still have got paper. At BRETS, we are keeping the documents which are over 200 million documents. Because remember, Home Affairs can't destroy any document, because a person can come back, in fact they do, and say, my grandfather had a property somewhere, and then I need to get that death certificate of 1908. We have to go there and find that document. So that's what, you know, we need now to automate now those documents. So we've already now working with the State South Africa to try and convert those documents so that it could be easy to retrieve them. And you know, we're finalizing now the automation of our birth, marriage, death, and amendments will assist us in doing that. And then the issue of the lack of capacity in certain areas, I think that was touched as well. And the issue of corruption, I think Minister indicated that we are trying with what little we have, but the important part then is that we are approaching, but as part of that repositioning of Home Affairs, that we must be given a power to do the vetting from the beginning up to the end. And again, in the Refugee Amendment Bill, which has just been passed, which now we're busy with the regulations, one of the key elements of those amendments was that we wanted to be able randomly to do a security vetting, not this thing of 5 years, so that now if now we are in a refugee reception office, whether you have done yours last week, if we say now today, no, you come, we're going to do a polygraphy test, must be able to do so. So that's what now we're busy now with the regulations now, because that has already been passed. Ministers talked about our mutapile, which is what we think if we can deal with that, it will help us to change the Home Affairs. Chair, I think we have touched on this one already, that as from 2015-16, we're at 81%, last year we're at 84%, this year were at 89%, but they were still waiting for AG to audit that 89%. There were only 3 targets which we could not achieve. It was that EMCS which we wanted to pilot, but now we've brought it in the 18-19. The smart cards, Chair, we miss it with about 135,000, but what was sitting in the government printing works was about 127, just waiting for printing. So effectively, we missed it by 8,000 for that. And it really, the major issue there was that thing that by June we stopped working on Home Affairs on Saturdays. So remember, we had the 6 operations per week, and we dropped it to 5 days. Then it had an effect now that into our achievement of the targets, and as well contributing on the issue of the queues as well. And then was the 70 misconduct cases submitted within that. So those were the 3 targets which we could not achieve. Chair, this one is just to say what helped us to move. In fact, Home Affairs was at 25% at one point. It's just to say what helped us here to achieve this really is to implement this, in particular that people knew that the issue of the management at a level that we take these things up to a level of the minister and it cascades down to the department through that, it helped us to make sure. In fact, we always have a structure we call the top 1,000, which we get in order for minister to address them. Even this year, it was because the late minister came back, so we were trying to still get that meeting in the beginning of the year, so that now managers must know that minister is standing in the parliament and say, here are the commitments which I'm giving in this financial year. But it's not the ministers who are going to deliver that, it's us. So if he talks to us, then it makes people to understand why those things must be achieved. Then, Chair, on the audit outcomes, I've talked about it and says now we are really, we think now we've firmed up on this. So really in the 17-18, the year now which we have finalized, we're submitting our financial statements by end of May. We are really confident that we'll still continue in the same vein. And we are saying also what helped us to be able to deal with that. But I think what was important for us was the last bullet. Because once people think that it is the DG who's pushing them on these financial things, they get relaxed or not that. But if it is driven from the Triple M, so the Triple M is the meeting which is the minister, is the deputy minister, is myself and the DDGs. So CFO goes there with a report and say, on a monthly basis, we wanted these offices to submit asset register. and then we say, no, but this one did not submit. So it makes people now to know that things, that's what I think has helped the department in terms of the compliance and changing things. Chair, this, I'm not going to, but I think Minister touched on this, but it was just important to show that this is how we still have about 218 offices which are still not digitized. But in this year, we're going to increase that number, reduce the 218 only with 9 offices, and will increase now the digitized, which are 194. And then Minister has already talked to the issue of the banks, so that number will change, and the hospitals. But the important one, Chair, is this one of the mobile units. In Parliament, when we were having our budget speech, we shown there a new mobile office of Home Affairs. On that day, we captured 145 smart cards on a mobile office, and there were 9 passports which were applied on the day, and then people were able to pay with their cards. We collected about 15,500 on the day. So now what it means now with that is going to now help us now to expand our footprints, because now those mobile offices will be able now to go into the rural communities, high schools, and all that. So we are really, if we can get more money, we can do more than 78 mobile. So ports of entry, we still have got missions, and then reception offices are 5, Chair. So to respond on that question of the court, Chair, the only dependence, we have been complying with the court order, but Home Affairs has got no right to go and acquire property. We cannot. It must be public works. That's why we never had this contempt of court, because when you go to court, it says, no, it's not Home Affairs, it's the public works we have not yet provided. We'll be in contempt. Once public works gives us the property, and then thereafter we don't do anything. So now in PE now, we public works has managed to find the property. It's going to be handed over to us by end of June. So we are hoping that by July we'll be opening now in PE, because that is done. In Western Cape, that decision was late. So the matter is still with the public works to find an accommodation. However, during the budget vote, we also demonstrated our booking system for asylum seekers, which now we've already implemented even here in the Western Cape, that we're able to go there. If you need to extend your permit, you just do it yourself at a machine. You don't need to meet with anybody else. So those improvements are there, which we are taking what it is in at Desmond Tutu. We have started it here. But when I give the target, there's one now which we'll be doing in this year. So this one is just to say, where are our visa facilitation centers, and then staff complement. Then this one says just the number of offices too. You can see the number of offices just cannot be able to service Home Affairs. We're only at 412 offices throughout the country. But if you compare us with post office has got about 4,000 outlets in the entire country. How do you compare? So we are 10% of the post office. So that's why it's something which we still need. I mean, take KZN with the geographical, because Gauteng might have a higher population, but they are condensed. But if you start looking at KZN, the geographical spread of the population, and you've got 77 offices, really. But again, there's nothing we can. But we know Northern Cape is another one. Northern Cape, you get some of our offices about 300 kilometers apart in the Northern Cape. So we know that, but it's these issues which we're talking about. Actually, this was just to demonstrate how we've managed to move on the hospitals and all that, and the footprint, how it's been growing. So here, I'm not going to take much time now, but I'll be going now into how did we split now these targets. Because remember, we have to come to committee to report on a quarterly basis. So it makes things now easy for us. Because now we know that in quarter one, this is what I must do. In quarter two, in quarter three. So the first one, And this one, Chair, which is compulsory in respect of establishing a public-private, this one, Chair, you recall that we said in the we have got the land in Lebombo for the refugee processing center. The Rumo said wanted to open this next to the border. So we'll be having now, we're busy now with that process of building a refugee processing center. How is it going to be different to the refugee reception offices? The refugee processing center is going to have some stakeholders which must be there, like your human rights, your Red Cross, your lawyers, this thing of justice, where they assist people with legal fees. Legal aid board, Department of Social Development, SCRA, and RAP. So that building must accommodate that. And then also, we wanted to have an accommodation, not that we're going to have a camp, but want to be able to say, if I'm coming from Swaziland, I'm really from a low risk, so I need really an asylum seeker or not. Then if the SCRA is there, the appeals board is there, and everybody is there, why can't we deal with that case within 5 days? So we accommodate you for 5 days, we deal with your case. If you don't meet, then you are just close to the border. We send you back, rather than now this thing that people come into the country, stay for 10 years. So that's what it will help us. So what we are doing now is that we are in quarter four. This one is then that will be going now to the market for that. Then the next one is about this issue of the capacity, that we really want to make sure that our inspectorate does the issues of law enforcement, going to the businesses and all that. So we're targeting to do those now within that quota. So that when we come here, we'll say in quota one, did we do the 35? And was it the farms? Was it the business? Or whatever. Then now, this one is our immigration. Remember I said now it has passed the white paper. So now in quarter one, we want to make sure that now we've done the SAYAS of the immigration bill, and then now we want to get now to go to FOSAT clusters in quarter two. By quarter three, we go to the ICTS. Then now by quarter four is then that now we'll submit to cabinet. So cabinet must approve by quarter four, and then we submit to. So parliament, we're going to deal with these bills in the 18-19, they will deal with them in the 19-20, but us is to process that. Selected ports, as we said, that though we are dealing with the big six, but also we do some improvements in the three. And then refugee, that is the one. Remember, we have done now the Desmond Tutu. We will be doing the PE in the similar way. So now we want now this year to look at the one at Musina. So that what can we do in Musina, which must be more or less the same with what we've done with the others. Then permanent residence, we say we'll still keep 85% this year, but next year we'll increase it to 90. And then our business general work permits, 90%, which we'll achieve. And then critical skills would be 85%. BMA. On the BMA, we are saying now, based on the assumption that the part in parliament, if we achieve it, we wanted that by end of June, we should have submitted now presidential proclamations now to the presidency. And then to minister for approval. So this one might be depending on how other things work. So it might not be in quarter one, maybe in quarter two. But what we really, our target was that by quarter three, we should be dealing now with the issues of looking for a proposal for a headquarters, and then now at an interim structure. So that interim now, it will be, so Minister will look at it and say, look for just the BMA to start, because currently we've got a project manager plus about 5 staff members, but maybe by end of the year we might have some critical core and then some headquarters and stuff. So this one, that's how we'll do, but it's going to be dependent now on the process of parliament. Then this one is just the monitoring of the strategy, as we said, so we'll give the reports at each and every quarter. And then this one is the big pot, this one. So as we said that already, the first proposal was approved by Treasury. So now here we are waiting now for people to submit back. So in quarter one, we'll be submitting now to Treasury for approval for the request for RFP. And then now in quarter two, we'll have pre-qualified bidders. Quarter three, we do assessment. Then in quarter four, we'll be appointing a preferred bidder. That's why I was saying by 1920, we must have now the people now on that. This is the registration of debts. So we said now it's 810 in order for us to comply with the MTSF. Smart card, we still keep it at 3 million this year, but in the following year will 4 million. And we're also saying this because now we're implementing these mobile units this year. So we didn't take into account the numbers which we'll get from that, because remember we're rolling them out. But now in the following year, they will already be fully deployed, and the banks will be in there. As the minister said, the number that the banks are looking at 20 for this year, but in the following year it will increase that number, so we'll be able now to move our target. Passports, we still keep it at 90%. This chair is the big issue, but there's a report. Minister met with us, CETA, and the dimension data. We've already presented to the minister this plan of how we're going to do this. So you'll see, Chair, well, we have been ambitious about it. We said we want 18-19 that we deal with all this problem. That's why we don't have a target in the 19-20. So that's what we will be doing. So it will be so every quarter we'll be able now to come and say where we are with this and how we are moving with it, so that now by quarter four we want now that those issues have been dealt with. This is the NIS which I was talking about, which ministers managed to say that. But as I said, in it, we'll do it in those three parts, and says we'll want first the asylum seekers to be in the onto live capture, and the specification for NIS approved, and as well as the business requirements for trusted traveler. And then, you know, in the 1920, then is then that the NIS must be operational based on the MTSF. So this is just the detail, you know, to say under each one what we'll be doing per each quarter. So when we come and report, it's easy for us and for the committee. AFIS, already as we said, that we are moving now from in the current year, we, by 18-19 we'll move all that data now into the APIS. Then in the 19-20 we're implementing now IRIS and the palm print, and we finish it now in terms of development. Then from 2021 it's just the issue of maintenance. Full biometric, we're just saying now they will do the one which now will be integrated as the new EMCS, that one. Then with the 62, in quarter two, we're busy now with our assessment. In quarter two, we'll do 21. In quarter three, 21. In quarter four, we finish. this one now is the phase implementation of the repositioned DSA. So now by 18-19, we'll have now the first draft of the bill submitted now to vote. It's a major issue, this issue of the repositioning of Home Affairs. So we really want that the cabinet now by the end of this year, they must, by quarter three, they must have approved now the white paper on a new Home Affairs, and then now the bill now submitted to minister by quarter four. Then now in the following year, then it's then that it comes to parliament. And then there's additional work which links with what ministers talked about on this work on choose. So we really in that plan, we are really wanting to be ambitious to say we want to move out of the traditional way of thinking that people can only come to the office to get services in Home Affairs. In fact, there's always this pertinent question Minister always asks us and say, if a child was born today, what Home Affairs must look like in 16 years when that child needs to apply for an ID? Must also be the one which will say, you must come to Home Affairs, we give you ID, or it will be the Home Affairs which says, you are 16, I send you information to you, not you coming to me, because I know you. I send information, you apply to an app, you get your ID, you get your card without even coming to Home Affairs. That's why again I wanted to look at what other access models we can have so that we can. So we're going to be doing this thing in this year, but in various stages. I've talked about the training of managers and then vacancy rate. We've got the issue of a ceiling. Home Affairs, yes, has got a structure of 17,000 staff members, but in terms of the money we have, it only takes us to about 10,000. Because of a ceiling, we don't have vacant posts now because we don't have money to fill them. So every month we look at the little we have and then we can fill. So we've prioritized now only the DDGs, which we look at it, and then if there's another people resigning, we can fill. We prioritize within. When people resign, it does not mean we automatically fill that post. It depends what are sitting in the priority and look at it. So that's what we'll do, and then reported cases have dealt with it. Fraud is something which we work on it, so we've got targets for that. And then cases which must be finalized within 90 days. And then also this look at some of our areas. We must do that threat and risk assessment. Vetting, so it's still dependent on SSA. So we do our work on our side. You submit those 470 files, but it does not mean they're going to be composed. Now you depend on SSA to complete that. You remember it's one of the issues on the BMA as well. Communication, we still continue to make sure that we do communicate. We talk to the people. We've got imbizos which we planned. That's what we'll be doing this year. Chair, I'm moving now to the budget. I'm going to take 5 minutes then. Chair, on the budget, well, that's what they've been allocated. It's just to say the budget of Home Affairs for 18-19 is 7.9 billion. But they did give IEC for this year 180 million. That 180 million is to deal with the issues of addresses for IEC. Then, but at the same, then now you get cut. So us were cut with 50 million, and then IEC was cut by 29. But you know, IEC in the following year, and then to deal with the elections in terms of their budget, they will have additional 747 in 1920, which will go to 2021. So they've got about 1.4 billion to deal with the elections. So that's why we're saying we think they've got funding to handle the elections. We don't think it's an issue. And then, Chair, this one's just a split between one program and the other. So we're just splitting what we have. So, Chair, we are saying, as we have indicated, that as we're given that budget, we make sure that our priorities are according to the budget we have. We don't want to overspend. That's what we deal with. So every unit knows their budget and the priorities, so that's how we deal with it. So, Chair, on the budget, really, there's not much we can say except that to say all our priorities are funded. We don't have a priority which is not funded, is sitting in our strategic plan. And then the ceiling on personnel, which we cannot exceed for this year, is 3.208 billion, and then it goes like that in all the other years. And then this is a CARA funding I was talking about, that what we have used that money for. We'll be buying for inspectorate about 52 vehicles, but it's not an ordinary vehicle. It's a specialized type vehicle for to help us to be able to deport people and all that using those vehicles. Then now we'll be implement what we call the case management system. So that now if those, what was a problem now is that I'm a foreign national. I've got a case on a civics, maybe I'm in a fraudulent ID, but now I've got a case on inspectorate that I did not do whatever, but now you are a different person. So we don't know about you at all. Then that's why now we can end up making a mistake granting you this, whereas we've got a case on that. So that case management system is going to help us to combine everything. But what is important is that handheld devices, so that when they meet with me on the street, they're able to say, give me your permit, they punch it. Even that system says, no, but we've got something here in the case, so that's what we want to build. Then, guys, we talked about the biometrics. We'll be using that 13 million to roll out our biometrics. Then, with the refugee reception centers, as we said, that we really want to take out paper in our refugee reception centers. So we've got that 19 million will be utilized for that. So that's what we've got from CARA funding. Also, we receive additional funding from IJS as we're funding for that APIS. Last year, we were given 264 million by police. This year, now we're getting an additional 81 million from them to assist us. So we're working now as a cluster, not as an individual Department of Home Affairs. Chair, with that, we are saying, as I'm coming back to what you said, Chair, that now 2018-19 is our last year for 2014 MTSF, so it is make sure that we achieve our total targets of the MTSF, and we still put our focus really on the identified strategic challenges and implementation of the strategic responses to mitigate that, and we'll continue with our improvement in the organizational and financial performance and rendering service delivery of the highest quality, which include this war on choose. We did submit to the minister the strategy of how to deal with that, so we're implementing those strategies. So with that, Chair, thanks. I tried to rush, but as I was saying, at least Minister's cover for me was just to confirm what the Minister was saying. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Chair DG and the Minister. You've concluded your presentation within the given time. We still have a minute or two, 3 minutes. Thank you very much for that. I think the advantage we have with this department, we said it before, people always said, where do you buy capacity? But I will say it because what we use is the capacity in the department, both politically as well as in administration. You will not find a DG asking another official to present. And also when presentations are done, all members, they cover almost most of the things that we would have asked as a committee. There is a presentation. Can I open for members to input on the presentation? Just for record purposes, members, I've got 3 apologies. 2 from Honorable Samga and Mamburu, they are off sick, and Honorable Ngwenya has also sent an apology. Let me start with Honorable Zwane, Honorable Pambos Bukwane, Honorable Hatim, Honorable Kaula, Honorable Stock will be the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. We welcome the presentation by the Department of Home Affairs, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Deputy Minister, the DG, and your officials of the department. We are always pleased to have you in the presence of the committee to engage on issues affecting home affairs. I just want to echo the sentiments of the Chairperson as to say that this is one of the departments that we've enjoyed working with from the time we assumed duties as a select committee responsible for this department, amongst many others for which you are responsible. Honorable Minister, if I were to be naughty, I would say sasijabula nje uma uyishiya le position ya home affairs, kodwa we were half-hearted because we did not know if the vision that we had for the department was going to carry on when we've left. And we are really happy that you are back to this office to lead the department, because really you appear to know where you want to take the department to. Thank you very much. The first issue that I wanted to raise is the issue of the budget cut. DG, in real terms, the budget has been cut by about 10.7%. And I don't know how we are going to come out. You have said that in spite of the cut that has been done or has been made in the budget, you are going to be able to achieve your targets. One would really hope that you are going to be able to modernize, to automize, or to automate and to professionalize the department, notwithstanding the cuts in the budget. But in the process of automation and the establishment of mobile units, I just want to know if there are any challenges with regard to network. Is your dimension data going to be linked to your units so that you are able to expedite your services and your services do not get delayed because of downtime? The other issue that the minister raised was the issue that you've got, or it was DG, we've got 3,000 branches for the post office. Is it not possible, minister, to actually piggyback on that and begin also, in addition to the commercial banks that you are using for the offices or for the services of Home Affairs, we also extend our services to the post office? Because if people that are drawing grants use the post office, we may as well link our services also to the post office. That is, if the network or the connectivity is going to allow your department to be able to do that. You have also said that there are 3 DDG vacant positions. How are they, when, in fact, are they going to be filled? I'm worried, DG, when you say that when a person resigns, it doesn't necessarily follow that you are going to fill the vacancy. Is it not that when a person resigns, he's leaving a post that was funded? It is a funded vacancy that is created. So why is it that then it becomes difficult to fill in the vacancy because that position was funded? And then lastly, the issue of the BMA. I just want to believe that at the end of it all, we are, Chairperson, going to be able to deal with the issue finally and conclusively, the issue of passing this bill for the BMA before the rising of the 5th Parliament. As the Minister has expressed that you would really wish that this is concluded and finalized and it is processed to the next office where it is going to be taken further. I'm happy, Minister, my last point, Chairperson, about the issue of Umlazi, Kwamashu, Ntuzuma. It was an error from the beginning, seriously, that we did not have home affairs offices in these areas. It was a serious omission. And if there are mechanisms that your department is putting in place to ensure that we extend services to these areas, Obiria, all those areas that are very congested in Durban, that are connection points, it's going to serve a very good purpose and people are going to begin to be really your ambassadors. And finally, thank you, DG. Whenever we form the home affairs offices and we've got a crisis or an urgent issue that we wish the department to address, we get the service promptly. There is an issue of a girl that was supposed to travel overseas. They were going as a group. She was the only one that had not received her, what you call, travel document. And I phoned the office to say that she was left out of the group by error. And within a day or two, the issue was fixed and she was able to follow the group immediately. So that is the kind of efficiency that we are looking for. And I do want to say thank you very much. This is not the only case. All the other cases, that one has actually forwarded to the department for urgent attention, they have been promptly attended to. I do want to say thank you for that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. And very big thank you for the presentation. DG, I would like most of the question you to answer and few for Minister to answer. Firstly, Minister, I would like you to answer this question very honestly. It's a concern. It's happening in my constituency. And I'm going to tell you it's in Saldanha, Ward 9. There's people, when residents wake up, they are foreigners who have sheikhs overnight, elected overnight. And when you ask them, where do they come from? They had been delivered by a bus. They are coming from different outskirts of the country, of their countries. They have been delivered to go and stay there, and they are here to stay so that they can help with the vote. My question, Minister, is how are you going to ensure, apart from the IDs, DM, apart from the IDs, that they do not vote? They do not vote. Apart from check the IDs, I don't know what is the plan they have with the IDs, because in order to vote with IEC, you need the ID. But they've been delivered. We are taking note of them, the municipality, and to an extent we've deployed police in Ward 9, where they come overnight. It's an ongoing thing. It's been happening for quite some time, but one of the reasons, I'm happy, Minister, you're back, because I know you're going to take this into account and you're going to go and search for it and monitor it, that it does not happen. Saldanha Municipality and the Mayor Maria Skoon is very concerned about this, and there's growing sheikhs every day in Ward 9. I would like to know, in terms of the building, DG, the vision that you have about the building that's going to be erected in Lebombo, with all the different departments that need to be, is a very good vision, and I would like to know the time frame. Will it be occurring by the end of this term, which is 2019, when we finish our term? Will it be erected? What are your time frames? What is your time targeting? Do you think by the end, by this May 22nd, I think it's May 22nd, May 22nd is the same day, that's when officially the fifth parliament ends. Will it be finished? The other one has been covered by the three DGGs. I would also like to know, it has been mentioned by Mazwan, the time frames. When are we going to DM? Where are we going to see them appointed? Because this vacancy had long been, it's long overdue. Their duty has been filled by whoever, and it means more energy being used by them. As on stage, Minister, in this department, there were arrests of officials, and it was shown. It was, you were clear and as a crystal to show us that you're dealing with corruption accordingly. it was shown on national TV, and I want to know how far did that process take place? Where are they now? And if you could just, together with DG, let this committee know that how far you've gone with those and the arrest, and how many people have been affected in that regard. Pending to that, DM, I want to know how many court cases are you dealing with currently? Because there are court cases that are on. How many are they, and how do you intend unfolding them, and when will they end? How many, if you can just expatiate, how many of them have gone to trials, how many of them have not gone to trials? I thank you.
Thank you, Shay. Just a few short issues. We hear all the right messages. We see also the right messages in the media and the right slogans, like the war on long queues, and also some action against illegal people trading in our country, which is actually unique, because elsewhere in the world where we travel, we see that immigration laws are strictly enforced. But now the department sits with a dilemma, a diminishing budget over the MTEF, vacancies that cannot be filled, an IT system that doesn't really can fulfill all the demands that is being put on it, because of various reasons coming right from CETA, the bandwidth, etc. Now my question is, how do we, and then we get the backlash from the employees. Overworked, obviously. I've experienced a situation in Potchefstroom with very limited people, long queues, very limited people behind the counters. Some people running around taking photographs, then jumping in behind the counter, doing some other work. Overworked. And then there's a backlash from the Public Servants Association, where they deny that the overworked officials are responsible for the long queues. We also, my colleague asked the question about court cases. I would like to know further than that, and how many instances are we as the department in default of court cases where we did not comply with the court ruling? I'd like to know that. Then in light of what I've said, it's all linked to this, also the refugee center that's in Cape Town. What's the plan forward? Because we have to look at something. We can't just put the rollout of this and the rollout of that and what we're going to do if there's not the financial support, if there's not the IT support, if there's not the support from Public Works. How do we get out of this? Where does the department see itself? How is it going to implement that, what they put on the board, on the screen there, where they are being hamstrung because of things that's outside of their control, like the IT system, like the diminishing budget? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, colleagues from the department, thanks for this presentation. I think my first issue is a little bit related to what the two colleagues have referred to, the issue of fraud and corruption. DG, as you go along with these plans of modernizing and automizing and all this stuff, how do you ensure that the processes are also in line with the objective of keeping all people in South Africa feeling safe, that the new measures we are introducing are not easy to be defrauded, Honorable DG Patricia Delil. I'm sorry, Mr. Blair. You say that on slide page 10, you say that on the social protection and social cohesion, nation building, you, as Department of Home Affairs, you had no commitment. I'm a little bit surprised. Why? Because we have had incidents of xenophobia in the country, which I would have wanted to believe that they also have something to do with Home Affairs, but you are distancing the department from social cohesion. And historical funding, I mean historical underfunding, just a comment. I'm saying, yeah, no, take that, talk to the minister that announced your budget on that one. Maybe he can help you. I don't know whether that minister is also lamenting like you, did she? That one is just for my notes. There is somewhere where I checked in this thing was so many. The PMA DG, what can you tell us what the financial, if there are any additional financial commitments when this is implemented? Because we are now dealing with the budget and you would like to implement the PMA before the end of this financial year, of the next financial year. But this will be after the budget has been approved. Will there be any additional financial commitments? And if there will be, have these been covered in the budget that we are looking into right now? I'm sure we'll deal with this when we deal with the PMA, but it's just an issue of interest to me to say, in looking at the PMA implementation, have you also covered the issues of financial implications for implementation before the end of the financial year? Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you very much. My questions are actually already canvassed by my colleagues. excluding the one of the DG Patricia Delil. I'm not sure about that one. Chair, I just wanted to add my voice also on the finalization of the BMA bill. I'm also of the view that we need to prioritize it as soon as possible, and then so that we actually comply with the program that the department has actually set out for themselves, so that we don't fall out of that, and then we ensure that before we go to elections or before we rise as the fifth parliament, and then the bill is properly been finalized. I mean, we had the opportunity as the committee a number of times. We met different stakeholders. We were in the port of entry in Durban. We had a number of committee meetings with different stakeholders. So I think it's that time where we need to just to put the final push. Thank you, Chair. Thanks.
No, thank you very much. Honourable members, let me start with the last one. I'm sure you came a little bit late. We have spoken to that. In our last meeting, in fact, we even said as a committee, which means that we meet after hours, after what we agreed upon in that meeting, we are prepared as a committee. But in the absence of that, we have reserved the 5th of June 2015. to finalize the deal. Whether it was busy scheduled as a committee, it is in our program, Honorable Stock. It is going to be, it is prioritized. And in fact, if you can check the number of time we've given to the bill as compared to other departments, it's far more than any other department we have. It shows the prioritization. For my side, let me also welcome the presentation from the department. A few things just to add from my side. DG, I indicated earlier that there was I did send you a message. It was on the 10th of April about Matatiela office. That date was a Matatiela also indicated the Nelspruit office, because I was called by a member there that there is really a chaos. There is another office not far from there which is closed, so people are moving from the other office to this Matatiela one. As a result, and there's only one officer there, there's a big problem there that needs to be attended into. In terms of the presentation, let me start by appreciating the initiatives which the department has been doing since we've been with the department, even before, which are really taking the department forward. It is, I know, Minister, you still want to see a new Home Affairs, but in a way it is, it has changed in a big way from the Home Affairs we know. But we appreciate the initiatives. We can see the impact of the initiatives that you are coming up with as a committee. They are really working. The system on a touch of a hand, the gates open, it is a very good system. We saw it in Singapore when we were from Malaysia. And we were looking around for officials only to realize later that you just put your hand and the gates open for you. And with other people, you'll see the light flicking, then they will be called aside. It's a good system. Very quick and not complicated. I think we support that, DG. It will assist us a lot. The National Identity System, also a very good system. Very, very good one, which we really appreciate, Minister, that initiative and also supporting it. The corruption that the department is dealing with, you are really doing that, because in our, when we are doing oversight at Bellbridge, the complaint we received there was that it's only Home Affairs that is dealing with corruption. Other departments there were not. So it was like you alone, but now because we're going to be having a BMA under your authority, we know that corruption will be dealt with on all officials that are working there. Also, a border, Elibombo border, when we had a provincial week, it was the same complaint that only Home Affairs that is dealing with corruption, other departments don't do. We really appreciate that, as other members have commented on that one. I just want to check. I hear, DG, that you're coming up with these other initiatives which you're going to pilot, but are you in the interim dealing with the minister with the long queues? Are you not thinking of going back to Saturdays, Sundays, which other things that I thought were working for you as a department? Are they not part of the strategies that you're going to do to use in terms of dealing with the long queues that we currently have? The Lebombo Center did not capture it well. Refugee center that you're going to build, one is also appreciating that a lot. If we could have it in all the bigger borders, it makes it very cheap for the department. When we went to Lindela, we're told that people towards Christmas or holiday, they get themselves arrested, use Home Affairs money or government money, be taken back to their countries, they come back, and money that we're spending there for food and everything, it's a lot of money. One member was even saying they are living a five-star hotel life, which South Africans are not having. I think these offices will assist because it will be easy for the department that immediately you take them back to their mother countries, even before they go out. What I wanted to check there is that will you still have Lindela Center with this, or the plan is that long term, once you have all these centers along the borderlines, Lindela may not be used for this purpose. Over to you, Minister. You know how you'll allocate the responses, but these are the questions from the members.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to honourable members for the comments and the questions. We will all respond. Perhaps let me start with the easier questions. Let me start with the easier questions and then leave the difficult ones for the Deputy Minister.
Not the honourable.
and for the DG and TDGs. The post office is a possibility, and it would be a good possibility for us because we would optimize on government resources. Then Home Affairs would not have to build new offices because we would simply get into available space. And the post office would assist us to reach farthest than we presently can. The various retail companies have also approached us and requested to have similar services as the banks have. And two additional banks have come forward, including Capitec. All of these are exciting ideas. But before we get carried away with all of them, the question is, where will the staffing come from? Mm-hmm. That's the key issue. Because I think Mr. Harting is correct, Honorable Harting. If you look at 2018 compared to 2017, in a number of Home Affairs offices, the volumes of clients have not only doubled, in some instances they trebled. In so doing, the size of the office did not increase, the working hours did not increase, the staff headcount did not increase, and we're not even allowed to exceed 30% limit for overtime pay. So it really puts enormous pressure. We blame Home Affairs officials, but we don't understand just the sheer pressure that they are working under. An office that would, in 2017, been servicing 3,500 clients. This year, since January, they are servicing between 7,000 and 8,000. So that means when you do the counting, you actually miss a vital point. When you do the counting, you realize a vital point. That the productivity of our officials behind the counters has actually increased threefold without us increasing overtime pay for them. So per official, in a number of our offices, their productivity has increased threefold. A person who would have been serving, 30, 40 people a day, now is serving up to 120 per day. But we blame them. There's a long queue, Home Affairs officials, Home Affairs goes again and so on. We just are not appreciating the the pressure, but also the commitment to the service, because they are serving the clients. We will complain that you closed the office when there were people in the queue outside, without counting the people who were inside and the people who had already been served, and the fact that we are currently in abnormal circumstances. So this is an issue that we have raised both with National Treasury and with DPSA. Indeed, we would like to reopen at 8. So the negotiations are on to try, on Saturdays. The negotiations are on to try and reach that agreement by the end of, as soon as possible. The decision by the banks was to increase the footprint by 20 branches this year was really a plea from our side, because National Treasury simply was not moving on a simple thing. We're supposed to sign a PPP with the banks, and National Treasury says to us, we need to do a feasibility study. We must appoint a transaction advisor. They must do a feasibility study. I wrote 3 letters since March, not to get even I acknowledge receipt of your letter, full stop, thank you. I'm not even saying give me a date of the meeting. I'm saying at least acknowledge receipt of my letter. Not even a response. Nothing. So, and we argue with them that a feasibility study, we've got records. More than 202,000 IDs have been obtained through the banks. More than 212 passports have been obtained through the banks. What other feasibility are you asking for? Here is proof. This thing works. This pudding is good. As late as yesterday, and I'm sure many of us do, I met people who said to me, Minister, I was at Standard Bank in Johannesburg to apply for my ID. I was in and out 5 minutes promptly. What else do you want? What other feasibility study must we do? But anyway, we will have to appoint a transaction advisor and compile this report and provide it. But the bureaucracy in government, the silo mentality, is astonishing, and it destroys all of us. Because if we had taken a decision, the banks are ready, Home Affairs is ready. The person who is not party to the agreement is the one stalling the agreement progress. So, sure, we have to wait. What can we do? So the difficulty with the post office, much as we would love it, would be staffing, if that can be resolved, because there is a cap that has been put, and that cap, you know, people always sometimes compare us with the South African Revenue Service, and it's not the fact that besides the fact that you have, 27% unemployed people, so who don't pay tax, they are not the concern of the post office, of SARS. You also have children. This 27% is of those who are economically active. And then you've got children and minor children who are unemployed. Then who are studying. They are not the concern of SARS. Then you've got people earning below a certain bracket who are not the concern of SARS. No, not for Home Affairs. For Home Affairs, everyone is our client, not once, not twice in your lifetime, multiple times. From the day you apply for a birth certificate to the day you change your surname, to the day you apply for this, you apply for that, ID, passport. The passport expires, a new one must be obtained. You go to a Home Affairs office, there is a person who says, I've got an ID with my mom's surname, another ID with my father's surname. I am now married. I want an ID with my husband's surname. Like, wow. Wow. We must now, before we get you the one with your marital surname, we must first resolve this one of your parents. You know, so for us, life is not rosy. And the budget that we have is only a fraction of what they have. So we need to navigate within that, but we're trying. With the banks, we will arrive at an agreement that introduces a service charge. So for those who want a service at the bank, we will have to charge a service fee so that we can be able to get stuff. For those who don't want to pay a service fee, and the service fee is not going to be unreasonable, so we're not going to say to you, if you go to a bank, on, in addition to 140 rand for the ID, pay 2,000 rand. No, it's going to be extremely reasonable. It's just to allow us to have some staff complement in over and above what we have. So I think it will be available to, it will be accessible to everybody. It will be accessible to a majority of people. ShopRite has requested to meet with us over similar arrangements. Now the difficulty, if we allow it, as I was saying, is not only that we will have staff issues, but the difficulty will be, do we want to introduce service charges now? Once we allow it to just happen without control, it introduces difficulties for government services which must be provided free. You pay for a particular service, but to apply for this document and to come collect it, you can't charge for it. What we have done through the repositioning program is to identify a number of programs that we can charge for services, which will assist us to generate revenue. What we need from Treasury is an agreement that we will get, if not all, but then a significant portion of the of these fees, so that we address our programs. The electronic visa surely will not come for free, and people will pay for this rather than go queue either at a machine or at a visa facilitation service. They will pay. It's you apply for this thing online. It guides you the step by step until you complete it. You obtain your visa electronically as you land at OR. Surely anybody would say rather that than go queue anywhere else. So there is a number of services we have identified that we will charge for, including premium visas. Some of the things you do, like everywhere, we know we can give you an ID in one day and a passport. We know we can. But, you know, if you do want it in one day, maybe let's get a service fee for that premium service so that we generate some revenue. So that's as far as the footprint expansion and the budget. But with the modernization, it's going to be possible for us, even at our own front offices. So if you go to Randburg and you have applied for your ID online or your passport, you no longer stand in the queue with those who are coming to do the applications in person. They have established dedicated counters for people who did online applications, so that you are accelerated. We want that to happen with all our offices. What we've been emphasizing is the need for the offices to learn from one another. And that's why we keep emphasizing the issue of management on the ground. What they are doing in the Western Cape, they've introduced a system working with radio stations and GCIS where at 8, at 10, at 2, they submit reports by SMS on queues in the office, all of front office managers. So I will say, in my office, there are no queues now. And a plane says, I'm experiencing excessive queues. So when he realizes that, oh, there are no queues at Malusi office, he then immediately informs, both through the city radio stations, your Voice of the Cape and others, and directly by talking to clients to say to them, ladies and gentlemen, if any among you are willing, if you go from Belleville to Barrack Street in Cape Town, there are no queues at Barrack Street now. And those who listen on radio will get an announcement on radio that, ladies and gentlemen, a message from Home Affairs, there are no queues in Wynberg. Please, if you seek services, go to Wynberg. It just helps to reorganize. Now, obviously, Cape Town is better manageable. You've got Barrack Street, Belleville, you've got Wynberg, you've got Khayelitsha, all of them within close proximity. But just the innovation is what we are asking all offices in all provinces to think about. And the leadership at Randburg is amazing. Long queues all the time. The problem is they've become so efficient that they naturally attract people to their office. Everybody says, you want good service, go to Randburg. So it creates a good problem for them, but we need to assist them with more footprint to divert the queues to other offices. Hopefully, we may do that with the introduction of new bank branches once the TPP has been signed. So, Umlazi kwaMashuntuzuma inanda. For now, we can only solve them through introducing the online service and banks, because what it will do is it will take away those people from Umgeni and Commercial and Prospecting who have access to the internet and who have data and who can afford the high cost of data in South Africa, who can apply online. It will assist, because then you reduce the numbers. What we have done with Umgeni is to reorganize it such that those who apply for PMD, those who apply for IDs and passports, are separated. But the automation is also assisting us, because many of the services can eventually be applied for online. We are automating birth, marriages and death application processes, registration processes. Once we do that, then it's easy. You do your application online, you come to the office to collect the document, it reduces your waiting time, you don't have to do a whole lot of things. So the automation is going to assist us. With the passage of time, hopefully around areas like your Bridge City, you may have a Home Affairs office. Around in Tembisa, you certainly need a Home Affairs office. We're looking at the whole country as to how we can spread the footprint and make it easy for people. We will look at the Saldanha Ward 9 issue. I'm sure the DG took notes. We'll report to the inspectorate to ensure in particular that those people don't get documents, but also to investigate, because if it's something that happens regularly, you know, you don't come by truck and nobody has organized the transport and organized the passengers. So you must identify the passengers, you must register them, you must hire the bus, and you must identify the spot. So somebody is busy with this organization. We therefore need to engage with the security cluster to identify this, and hopefully they will be better helpful this time than in other cases when we have requested them to assist us with issues of this nature. The counter-corruption program is going well. At least we are able to record every year. What it needs now is a strong leader who's going to ensure that the momentum is not lost. As I said, 60 people were arrested last year. Of them, 33 were Home Affairs officials. 11 have been arrested this year since April. So, and of those, 9 have been Home Affairs officials. In one of the problems for us is that once people are arrested, the resolution of the cases takes long. So at Maseru Bridge, we got 20 people arrested in 2016. Of those cases, only 3 have been finalized in court, not by us, by the court. Only 3. Now, we can't replace the other 17 because their cases are not finalized. They may just as well come back, win their cases. So we are operating on skeleton staff at Maseru Bridge until these issues are fully resolved. But we have appointed skeleton staff. They are working. In actual fact, the reports we've been getting recently at Maseru Bridge, at Bait Bridge, are that there is movement. At Bait Bridge, we've appointed an acting head who is doing very well. The problem is now on the Zimbabwean side. Even at Maseru Bridge, you don't experience long queues from the point of view of South Africans. They are managing the queues well, and we intend introducing new measures at these areas which will expedite movement and assist us. The issue of diminishing budget, I think Honorable Harting have spoken to it. We will try to get this agreement finalized on charging for certain services. You know, we have premium services at our visa facilitation centers for which we are not able properly to charge because there is no agreement on the tariff. For the verification, online verification with the banks and insurance companies, we charge 9 cents. And then the banks, for the onward verification, charge 10 rand for a service that doesn't belong to them. That belongs to us. So they are making a profit of 9 rand 91 cents. But this 10 rand could be charged by us. In actual fact, surely we should be charging the banks and insurance companies much more than even 10 rand. I'm not charging the client you are verifying. I'm charging you for the service. You as a bank, you can afford to pay Home Affairs. So we actually are getting shortchanged, like seriously shortchanged. And I think it's something that we're trying to finalize as quickly as possible with National Treasury. I have spoken about Saturday services that we are negotiating reopening, and it's a matter of us getting an agreement with the unions and DPSA. Those were the questions that I cherry picked, so I leave the rest.
Thank you very much. Minister has basically covered most of the stuff. Maybe I should just cover the court case issues. Particularly what I want to cover is the default question that has been asked. And I think it's related to the issue of the refugee reception centre. Let me just put into perspective and give you a background. We closed the Port Elizabeth one first because there was rampant corruption. We learned that it wasn't just one or two officials. It was essentially all of them who were in collusion. And what, if you go to the Port Elizabeth Reception Center today, you will find one nationality dominates that asylum center. And those are essentially the Bangladeshi community. Now, it didn't make sense to us that people come all the way from Bangladesh. Very often they come through one of our neighboring countries. But they end up for the first time registering themselves at the Port Elizabeth Asylum Center. There was a reason for it. In fact, one of our officials from my office landed in Port Elizabeth Airport at the time that that asylum center was still operational and found a lot of Bangladeshis who had flown in from Johannesburg. And they were all waiting for their transport. And he started engaging and asking them, when did they come, what are they going to do, and so on, you know. And the answers that he got revealed something very interesting. They had come having paid to come and live and work in South Africa. They were waiting at the airport for a bus. The bus was going to take them straight to the asylum center. And they were asked to submit their passports to somebody who was collecting their passports and putting it in a checkers package. So that by the time they get to the asylum center, they don't have any documents and they just say, we are asylum seekers. Now, that was why we closed the Port Elizabeth Center, because there was rampant corruption. It took us 2 years to close the center because we didn't realize, we were not alive to the fact that it was so pervasive. We thought it was one or two officials when it was everybody. Because when we tried to close it initially, we realized that it wasn't closed. People were operating and opening the centers surreptitiously on a weekend to process these things because they were clearly corrupt and getting whatever they were getting. And there was no way that we were going to keep that center open because the network was beyond Home Affairs. It extended to the whole security system as well there. So we closed that office using what we thought were executive powers provided for in legislation. If you look at the law, it allows the DG to establish reception centers wherever needed. And we assumed that if you consider the legal principle that whatever you allow, you can disallow. So if you open, you can close. And we used that power. Anyway, it's a long story, but essentially, that is the background to the Port Elizabeth office. Likewise in Cape Town, Cape Town was essentially closed. At the time we were discussing, you would recall members because you were all part of that discussion, the lead up to the white paper. And one of the things that we had discussed as government was this policy of moving the asylum centers to the border.
and we didn't quite understand. The rest of our asylum centers are in the north, and then one in Durban, which is also close to a border. But Cape Town isn't. Cape Town is not close to any border where people can just cross over and say we want asylum. So we reasoned at that stage, why is it that we have an asylum center in Cape Town which is overutilized, but you have one in Musina that isn't utilized at all? So there must be a reason why this is happening. And given that government had discussed this policy of moving the asylum centers to the border, we then said we would close the Cape Town office for newcomers. Not for those who are already here, who have applied and who are awaiting outcomes or who want to apply for their refugee documents, passports, etc. Likewise with PE. We didn't close for everybody, it's just newcomers. So we thought it was a good nuanced approach to be able to still service the community that had already applied, because you can't prejudice them, but you stop new people from coming because you've got centers where they arrive in the country that are being underutilized. well, the courts obviously think differently, and I must say that I have my views about this issue. Because I do think that there's something called separation of powers. Separation of powers essentially says that the executive makes decisions when it concerns budgets. Parliament makes the law. And the courts interpret the law and adjudicate disputes in a fair and unbiased manner. The courts must not decide and make decisions that have an impact on the budget. That would be, from my perspective, as a classically trained lawyer, that would be overstepping the mark. So when the courts start saying, no, you will open the refugee reception center, that has budget implications. So you can't snap your fingers and say suddenly a building is going to arise. Suddenly you're going to have money for officials there. Suddenly there's going to be computers and technology and servers and all kinds of things. So when the courts do make these decisions, they mustn't be surprised that we would default, because those things simply don't happen that way. And in any case, there is government policy that says we will want to move these reception centers to the border. So Lebombo is going to be one such thing, and we're going to be calling it the Asylum Reception Center. So that asylum seekers must start there. It's only when they become refugees that they are allowed to come into the country and then utilize the reception centers or our offices when they need their services. And this is, I think, the more rational way of dealing with it. I am not surprised about Ward 9, and I'm quite sure that you are going to have this throughout the Western Cape now that the court case has been won by the NGOs who are basically, they make their living off asylum seekers and refugee matters. Now, why do I say I'm not surprised? Because you bring busloads of people, exactly the PE example, is going to start replicating in the Western Cape. Because the asylum center is a way that you have to acquire some kind of documentation if you have arrived illegally, very quickly. It's the only way that you can, it's the exception to the rule. Normally, when you are an immigrant or a migrant, you apply outside of the country for a visa before you come in. This regime gives you a space to say, because you are persecuted in your country, we understand that maybe you had to run for your life and you forgot your documents at home and you didn't have time to apply at an embassy for a visa to come to South Africa. So we allow you to come into our country, then we assess your claim for asylum status. Now, as you know, what has happened before is that it took very long to deal with applications of asylum seekers. And this was good for the people who traffic people in illegally, because it means those people stay in the country for very long, and all we have to do is to extend their Section 22 visas to allow them to stay and work in South Africa for a long period, for as long as it takes us to finalize their application. Well, we've changed that. We now have a benchmark of 3 months where we process applications for, we adjudicate them within 3 months. But you see, our laws are such that it allows people to appeal for and have their decisions reviewed, and then if they're still not happy, they go to court, and it stays there for many, many years, which essentially has the same effect. That means they stay in the country for a long time. So this refugee center that's going to be reopened in Cape Town is very much center, the center of the cause of what you're now going to see in the Western Cape. I would be less worried about the votes, because obviously they can't vote. They have the right to work, which is what you should be worried about if your constituency has a lot of unemployed South Africans. They have the right to study, which you should be worried about, because the Western Cape's education budget is going to be implicated. So those are the things that we should be worried about as politicians. And we must start having this debate in our communities. It's not about being xenophobic. It's about complying with the rule of law, that people who come into our country must comply with the law that allows them to do so, and they must do so in a regular fashion. Otherwise, we end up having a lawless society, and you have the kind of social ills that you've seen in other places as well. KZN has been in the news recently. You've seen Johannesburg with the hijacked buildings, etc., etc. All of these are social spin-offs arising out of this undiminished flow into our country, which is why I think DG and Minister have both said that you're not going to find the solution in the asylum system. And yes, we have become more efficient, and we've tried our best to ensure that that can't be used for corrupt purposes by digitizing and using all kinds of technology. But the real solution to this is proper border management. You can't deal with the symptom without dealing with the cause. And the cause is this unabated flow into our country. So I thought I would just deal with that very, very properly. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I want to
make a request. Unless if there are questions which members strongly feel that there needs to be specific questions to be answered, because in a way they try to cover almost all the questions. Members are having some commitments around one. If we could just... BMA budget.
So we have the proposal is that we will respond these questions. We have them. We'll respond them in writing as we used to do. Mm-hmm. But for BMA, as we said, Chair, you remember in the 18-19, we don't want to implement anything. It's the legislative process is everything. But in August, it is already in the mandate paper. We will be submitting now the budget for 19-20. This that time is going to start. But Chair, all the others we have taken note, will just submit the responses we used to do.
Dadiela, if you could just attend my Dadiela.
Minister has said, look, what Minister has indicated, what is requested from us, firstly, we are taking the whole 194 offices and do a profile for each one. What are the challenges? What is the number of staff? What is the population that office is serving? What is the level of a manager which is there? Because what we have in Home Affairs, which we debated this, is that in Home Affairs, in the front office, you've got level 6s. Then at the back office is where you've got senior people. But who is interfacing with the public is not the level 6. The level 6 can't deal with that issue of ID of my mother's surname an ID of my father's surname and then an ID of where I get married. How is going to deal with that issue if it is at a lower level? But if the head of offices, maybe, if I can have money, with deputy directors and directors, then they will be able to do, then the level six are just people who are capturing and doing all that. So those are the things, you know, which we'll be doing. Then after that is when I come now to this, because even with this thing of the banks, we don't want the banks to come and open 20 branches here in the Cape Town city. We must be able to say where we've got problems is in Sterkspruit, is in Matatiela, is in KZN, where the minister has already given some. Then we say now go and open where your opening is going to assist people, not the opening just to, for, yeah, that's for the sake of opening. So those are the things that I which we'll be looking at. But we will respond, Chair, on other.
Thank you very much, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, and the team. Honourable members, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.
I don't know.